We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Djadjawarong country.
Hello and welcome to the Beyond 90 podcast. It is episode 108, which is awesome because it means we're up to cat 108 and we've got a special guest today, which we will get there briefly. If you're wondering where Shez's voice has gone, she's currently in a plane, so you're stuck with me. And my name is Molly Appleton and I pop in from time to time when I've got the time. And with me is two voices you might be a bit more familiar with, and with Stefan. How's it going, Stefan?
Yeah, good, thanks, everyone. Hope you're all well, and delighted to have Heather on with us today.
And you've wrecked the... I was waiting for the long reveal. Anyway, Heather Garriock is here, cat 108, but I'll introduce Madge first. How are you going, Madge?
Good, thanks, Molly. Enjoying... it's getting a little bit warmer up here in Brisbane, and that makes going to the NPL a little bit more comfortable sitting on the sideline.
Being warm is only something I can dream of being. But we'll get to November eventually. Cat 108, we've got Heather Garriock, who is a player I got to enjoy watching growing up, and was one that, I loved watching you, Heather. I don't know if you would be aware of that, but her Matildas debut was in 1999. Her grassroots club, was it Leppington Lions out at MacArthur?
Yeah, indeed it was, yes.
Excellent. You made 130, I'm bundling that up, but 130 appearances, 20 goals, couple good goals in that as well, playing from midfield, and a host of other things. You've been to Olympic Games. That's where your first cap was, from my understanding. And you've done World Cups. You've won W League Goal of the Year Award, Julie Dolan medalist. And you're doing heaps of other good things. You've been Canberra United coach, of course. You're currently on this, the Football Australia board, and you've done lots of things. I reckon let's start from the start. You appeared your first game at the Olympics at 17. What do you remember of those experiences?
I will correct you, not that I do want to. It wasn't at the Olympic Games, which was in 2000. I debuted, actually. It was in China in 1999. I got a call up because one of the players was injured, one of the lefties was injured, and got asked to come down to the AIS and be part of the centralised program for a couple of weeks, which was kind of cool at the time because I was working away as an office trainee, would you believe? And so headed down to Canberra, cold Canberra, and spent a week, I just thought it was a training camp. And next thing you know, I had to get my passport in order and off I went to China, who was ranked, I think, second in the world. And I made my debut in 99, sitting on the bench as a young 16-year-old and sort of happy to be there. And in the 22nd minute, Bridget Starr, who was playing left back at the time, got injured. And I got the call up and, look, I was out of my comfort zone and I thought, oh, no problem, I can do this. And I got substituted on and started the next game. And that was my debut. I was in front of about 35,000 crazy Chinese fans that were hitting these balloon things that you couldn't even hear yourself speak. But a debut at 16 it was, and it's one of the best moments of my life, to be honest.
That's awesome. And I mean, with that, what do you remember of your experiences at different things, at World Cups and Olympic Games, and how were they different?
Yeah, look, it's when you're young, it's, I look back as a mother of three right now and you think, wow, if my children ever played a high level, even at state level, I'd be so proud. So you can imagine what my parents were like. My dad was still is a mad Hearts fan, Scottish by blood. That's where I get, I think, my temper from. But yeah, look, growing up and playing football and then debuting at a young age, you sort of just worked hard. Going to the 2000 Olympics was, I debuted in October. The Olympics was that following September, which was really cool because I know now how big the Olympic Games in 2000 was and how it captured the imagination of all sports fanatics, not just footballers. And now I see there's such an amazing opportunity come around this time next year where we're going to hold one of the biggest events in Australian history next to the 2000 Olympic Games in the Women's World Cup in 23. So I'm sort of looking at the games as a 16-year-old and look, that games, I sat on the bench but came off the bench every game, which was cool. But I really think that it really drove me to want to be the best and train hard and be better than I can every day. So, yeah, then I went on to obviously go to Athens Olympic Games, 3 World Cups, and then, you know, I could be a professional footballer where I had my Matildas contract but also played all around the world. So, you know, super grateful for the football life that I had as a semi-pro / pro, depending on what time of or era it was. So, yeah, that in a nutshell has been a little bit of my journey.
So maybe on that as well, Heather. So in 2010, of course, you were part of the Asian Cup winning side. What was that experience like? I think it's one of those moments that, well, yeah, coming a little bit later to the game as a fan myself, it's one of those moments that people always pointed me, go back, look at that game. It's one of the big games in Matilda's history. So what was it like being part of getting silverware for the country?
Yeah, it was the first lot of silverware that any team had won at Football Federation Australia. And it was a really historic moment, not just for women's football, but just football in general, I think. Look, it's funny that we talk about this because I had a conversation with Tom Somali today about reminiscing about the old times. And we often do it depending on you know, what we're sort of talking about. And I really put it down, us winning that 2010 Asian Cup, down to the management, down to Tommy, down to the support staff, how adaptable we were, how flexible we were. But first and foremost, how defensively disciplined we were. And at any one time, any player could come into a position and they knew that Tommy and the other coaching staff believed in them to the point that we could win, that we could get a result. Didn't matter how we play, didn't matter what style we played, because at times we played very direct style. Remember, we had players like a Sarah Walsh up front who was super quick. We'd feed the ball in behind the defence to Lisa Devana. So it was a really big moment. But talking about Sarah Walsh, she didn't play in the final. She was injured. Talking about Lisa Devana, she was injured. She didn't play in the final of the Asian Cup. And same as Katie Gill. So we're talking our three top strikers didn't play in that, but we still believed that we could do it. And it came because of the leadership within the team and how relaxed Tommy made us feel, but at the same time, still out of our comfort zone as well. But, yeah, we had the young guns that are superstars now. I'll talk about Sam Kerr and Caitlin Ford, who were in that team at 16 years old, for them to feel and get a taste of what that winning feeling is. I really think it helped propel them to understand the meaning of winning, but also the meaning of winning while playing for Australia. So, yeah, look, it was such an amazing moment. You know, people often see footage and I see footage now and just get goosebumps because it is a moment in time that we look back on and let's hope we can win the Asian Cup in the near future as well. For Australia, I know our men have done it as well, which is brilliant. So something to strive towards. We're good enough.
Mm. Heather, I reckon that was my women's football in this country light bulb moment, that particular victory into 2010. So I've had a couple of light bulb moments. I guess we all do. One was the 1974 World Cup. I'm that old. but as far as women's football here, that was it for me. I reckon that was the one that got me, you know, just totally on side with what was happening in the women's football scene here. So, yeah, I'll just ask you another question while I'm at it. I do some writing about the Aussies in the Nordic football scene, And we see that you've also had some time with Fortuna Hearing in Denmark and FC Malmo in Sweden, and also with the Chicago Red Stars. So can you just briefly talk about the different experiences you had there as a player and how it was with regards to training and facilities and medical and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, look, I think it's a great question, Stefan, because we're seeing our players play all around the world. And look, I spent some time over the weekend catching up with Ellie Carpenter, and she was reminiscing about her championship winning, Champions League. It's the second one. She's what a young 22-year-old, and to see her playing in Europe. But to be honest, Fortuna, LDB Malmo and Chicago Red Stars was nothing near Lyon. Lyon was the pioneer club. It still is the pioneer club. It doesn't matter what we see out of the WSL. This is a club that chose to invest in women's football, and they continually do that. So looking at that European side of things, but in terms of me personally, my very first experience overseas was Denmark. Fortuna Hearing, who really took care of me as a young player. Many Australians, that was their home, Alison Foreman, Julie Murray. A lot of Australians have been part of Fortuna Hearing. But what it gave me the professional side of football. It allowed me to work my trade, be a full-time professional, train in the morning, go to the gym in the afternoon or practice my free kicks. It allowed me to understand what it's like to train in the snow, to play three games a week, whether it be in the cup or whether it be on the weekend. But the thing that was really important that it made me realise, and we spoke about winning before, is how much passion and how important it was to not only the players, not only the support staff, not only the people that were at the club that would volunteer their time, but the fans, how much it meant to the fans. And I never forget when we won the championships, the party, the going to the mayor's office, being recognised all around the city. That was just incredible, and that to me gave me that I guess that feeling of wanting to continue to play in Europe. And then went on to play at LDB Malmo, one of the top Swedish clubs, which the former Norwegian coach was the head coach there, Martin Schorsen. And he was fabulous as well. I got injured in the W League before that, so I was coming off the back of an injury. But again, this is a country that knew and understood women's football and the investment in women's football and how important that was for success of their national team. Now, Sweden being successful is not by chance. It's a byproduct of the league being so strong, and it continues to be strong. Obviously, not as strong as the WSL, and the investment isn't as strong. However, it's allowed their players to be full-time professionals in their club, but also represent their country as well. Talking about Chicago Red Stars, that was a dream of mine to play in America. As a young girl, I wanted to go to college, but I debuted for the Matildas too young and didn't get that opportunity. And it's a really fabulous pathway for any young aspiring footballer to want to also play football, but also, build the foundations of their academics as well. But being drafted, I was drafted 13th draft pick in that draft, which was amazing. Emma Hayes was a coach, really high expectations. Our team was incredible. Cristiani, who was, arguably the best Brazilian. Marta kept winning the FIFA Women's Player of the Year, as we know about the Ballon d'Or. But he had Karen Carty in that team. He had Megan Rapinoe, who'd just come out of college. I knew she was going to be a superstar. She had so much swagger walking into that dining room the first moment I met her. Carly Lloyd, just come off the back of winning a gold medal. It was just incredible, such a fabulous environment. But it was the story of a champion team or a team of champions, and it was very individual, those players, and we didn't come together and unite as a team. We didn't even make finals that year. So look, I've had many experiences in different forms, philosophies, different styles of football. It's been really cool to be able to be coached by different coaches as well. And that's what obviously helps with my passion for coaching. You know, I had a coach in Denmark who was really influential on my career. I went back to Denmark to play. His name was Flemming Nelson. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago, but again, Danish, but phenomenal. His tactical mind to bring a young kid from Australia over to Fortuna Ühring and believe in me as a player, especially, you know, especially a young left footer. I remember playing left back and scored in every single game, I think 15 games that I was contracted, and that's why he invited me back the second time around. So, yeah, look, I'm really grateful for the career I've had, not only internationally but domestically as well, and being able to play in the W League in my area was really incredible.
Great memories. Thank you.
I mean, turning to the W League, you've done both sides in terms of being a player and being a coach. How has that journey been, and is there a door still open for you to, obviously there's involvement as you in your role as the board, but, you know, you've got to ask the question, you know,
what's your
involvement look like in the future, and how's that journey sort of been?
Yeah, look, you know, as a player, I'll talk about me playing in the W League. I never forget when the W League was established. Just the feeling to be able to play for Sydney FC, to be able to captain Sydney FC. I absolutely couldn't believe that there was going to be a women's team that was also same as the men's team. And I never forget when we got the news that was going to be the case. It was just unbelievable. So, yeah, look, I played for Sydney FC as well as, you know, for Western Sydney Wanderers, which is where I grew up in Western Sydney. So, such a great experience, and I'm just delighted to see that there's two rounds this coming W League season. I spoke about the Swedish league before and how fundamentally important it is for players to be able to have a foundation league. Now, some will say all of our best players are going overseas, but that's okay. We need to define what our league is and what we want it to be. And for me, for young players to be able to come in and play in two rounds and finals football under pressure week in, week out is only going to build the base and grow the depth. And that's what I think we really need. We've been crying out for that. And it's ultimately going to help these young players develop. And then maybe they do go on to the playing internationally, but I think we'll do our job in Australia if that's the case. And then we'll just keep growing the depth. So I'm really happy about that. In terms of my coaching, look, ultimately, as a player, you guys know what type of player I was. I still am. I live and breathe football. It's in my blood. It always has been. I've always been a student of the game, and something that I've always wanted to stay involved in football, and ultimately transferring from being a footballer or being a player to coach. I thought that was the next best thing. And to be honest, I think being a player, the feeling that you get, the camaraderie amongst the team and that, you know, that togetherness, it's very different being a coach. It's very lonely. It's, you know, you're leading the team, but ultimately, you know, it's a selfless job, and you spend a lot of time putting in, and ultimately, in trusting in the players to execute however it is you play. So, yeah, look, I've had the opportunity to coach at young Matildas level, learn off some phenomenal coaches, and then I had the stint at Canberra, which if I look back, there's so many learning opportunities for me. If you ask me now, if I had a W League team now, would I do things differently? Absolutely, I would. I'm completely changed. Obviously, I'm leading and CEO of Australian Taekwondo, a national sporting organisation. You know, I've got a heap of staff under me and leading a really big project, you know, from our Olympic sports to our participation base. So, yeah, is the door closed for coaching? It never is. Who knows what's around the corner? I've just debuted as an assistant coach for the A-League All-Stars, and Dwight York was the coach and Robbie Stanton was the assistant coach. And wow, I had the best time of my life, but again, I learned so much. And, you know, the one thing about me is I love to grow, I love to learn, and, you know, it never stops there. So who knows what's around the corner, but what I can say is that You know, as a young coach, I think if there's any advice for young coaches, especially transitioning from being a player, is it's certainly not like playing. It's completely different. And it takes time to understand and know yourself as a coach and understand the structures and processes that are required to be able to lead a successful team. So they're the things that I've slowly learned. But I'm really happy to have coached Canberra United because it's given me the skills and the attributes and the character to be able to do what I'm doing today, which I'm really grateful for.
You had some really cool initiatives while you were here, Heather, with regards to the NPL and getting across what was happening in the scene locally and also trying to bridge the gap in talent between the NPL scene and the W League at that time.
Yeah.
Some of that doesn't seem to have continued, but it still seems to me like it's an ongoing issue, probably across the board. So would you agree that there's still some work to do in the scene in that regard?
Oh, yeah. There's a huge amount of work to do. My passion is about those young girls dreaming to be one day Matildas, but do you know the thing about it is, and I said it before about the education academic side of things, is if we look after our players, the whole player, not just their footballing ability at a young age, then we can set them up for life. And for me, being able to nurture these young players, and again, I spoke to Ellie about how Leon does it, and they're obviously the young girls train a couple of times a day and then also do their study and schoolwork as well, is how can we are so far away from the rest of the world, so how can we nurture these players and not build them up for failure? Because ultimately what's happened in the past is, if you look at the W League players that have come through, how many of those W League players have gone on to then represent Australia at a national level? Now there's a gap between our national team and our full national team and a under 23 national team and then a young Matildas. But again, there's only 20 players, but I know all around the country, and especially with our 23 World Cup coming up, the amount of young aspiring players that want to be like the next Ellie Carpenter, that want to be like the next Mary Fowler, is just around the corner. And we don't have the infrastructure and we don't have the strategy to be able to cope with that. And one thing I would love to be able to influence, especially being on the board of Football Australia, is how can we be equipped to be able to grow that depth of young talent here in Australia. Now, I can't speak highly enough of Ernie Merrick, who's come in as the Chief Football Officer. He knows the system. He knows the system. He's Australian. He's been through not only the youth side of things, but also through the institute side of things, knows youth development, knows high performance. So I know that he's going to bring so much to the game and no doubt be able to listen to the people around him to be able to help with that. But yeah, you're right, Stefan, in Canberra, it's really difficult in Canberra. Anyway, I've seen it for my young daughters as well. I've got a 9-year-old daughter and a 7-year-old daughter. And what we've got here on the Central Coast compared to what we've got in Canberra is chalk and cheese. And they've just come on so much in terms of football because of the infrastructure that is here for them.
Some people have raised concerns, is probably a bit harsh, but with the W or the Dub going to full home and away, how that might affect the NPL season and the teams that it, because, you know, especially NPL in New South Wales being so stacked with so many A-League women's players. So is it, do you see it as more of a step change that, like, we've got to get the professional level to that, you know, that fully professional full home and away, and then we work on the rest of the structure and the pathways after that? Or is it something where we're trying to get done all at once to try and get the system ticking along well?
I'm an optimist. Question. Yeah, I'm an optimist. I believe in collaboration. We haven't utilised the strengths of our NPL clubs. We haven't been able to see that, we've got the clubs who play a really important role in the development of young players. And then you've got the NPL clubs that continue to play that role. And if everybody knows their role and responsibility within the football system and pathway, then I think that we could work really, really well together. And for the NPL clubs, what can they do and how can they contribute to then pass on the player, whether it's a young player, to then to that W League? And how can we work together? What does that look like? Obviously, that's a million-dollar question. But I think it's a brainstorm session. It's to get everybody in the same room together to be able to collaborate and work together to one common goal. If the common goal is that we want to grow the depth in Australia of footballers, then let's do it together. How can the clubs contribute? How can the NPL clubs contribute? All around the country, that is. How can the leagues contribute? And also, where do the national teams fit? And how can they contribute? And what does their role look like? So I think it is a million-dollar question, but I think the A-League women, that going to two rounds, is only going to strengthen the middle-tier players to be able to play week in, week out under pressure. Because there's one thing playing NPL against clubs. You're not playing for sheep stations. When you play against a Melbourne City, if you're playing for Sydney FC or a Melbourne Victory, you're under pressure constantly. And that's what you need to be able to continually develop, is to be able to be challenged under pressure. And then that way your decision-making is challenged as well.
Yeah, I think we've had that same conversation, even just with getting our younger teams more of these international tournaments as well. I think we had that chat last week. It's fantastic to see more opportunities for our junior girls getting out there into big competitions and getting used to that sort of pressure.
Yeah, just on that. And people look at the AFF tournament that we've just won, the under 17. This is, I spoke earlier on in the podcast about the feeling and winning a medal and lifting a trophy. Now, remember Sam, Caitlin, Catley, Emily Van Egmont did that when they were the same age, and this is only going to help. And regardless of the competition, and I know it was against Philippines and Thailand, it is regardless that those young kids and those young athletes and footballers that have had that feeling of winning will only want that more, and will only want to continue to develop and continue to want to be the best. And I think that is the best thing for them. I think by them winning an AFF tournament, congrats to Ray and her team, but I think that's only going to make them want it more and train harder.
The last time I saw you in person, you had just come off the field at O'Connor Oval playing for Canberra Olympic. Are you still finding some time to pull the boots on occasionally?
That are roping me into playing, like Ash Sykes and Nicole Begg, who coached the team. But look, I had an absolute ball playing for Canberra Olympic, such a fabulous club in Canberra, such a family club. It was brilliant. I have found a new challenge, though, and I've been running, and I'm running in the City to Surf this Sunday. So I'm really excited.
Looking forward to Heartbreak Hill.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'll let you know how I go, but I've been training for that, which is cool.
Talking about different roles, in terms of being CEO of Australian Taekwondo, can you tell us a bit about that and your transition? I mean, you've already touched on it a bit with how coaching's impacted, what you're doing now at board levels, but can you tell us a bit more about that transition and what you're doing there, as well as obviously with Football Australia?
Yeah, sure. Look, it was pretty random to most people, but I found while I was coaching, education was something really important for me. I studied my master's degree while coaching at Sydney University, and I felt that I'd fallen out of love with football, and maybe it was time that I needed to turn my back on football for a while. And find something else. And the opportunity came up I was reached out to whether I'd be interested in this role. And I thought it was pretty random. However, it's totally my nature to give it a go and give it my best shot. And look, it was competitive in terms of the interview process. But I think the thing that got me over the line, and which has always got me over the line in life, is my competitive nature and wanting to work hard and you know, make things and make a difference. And with the Australian Taekwondo role, what I've found to be most important is surround myself around people that are smarter than me, if I can be honest, and their strengths are, look, I absolutely love my job. Every day I feel grateful because I'm making a difference to Australian Taekwondo. We set a strategy right when I walked in the door is to modernise, commercialise and professionalise Australian Taekwondo. And we've done that in spades, you know, from a Channel 7 broadcast deal to, you know, a digital transformation to now we're in the midst of Commonwealth Games and I'm leading that through World Taekwondo. So look, really different. But in saying that, it's something that, you know, obviously being a CEO is no different to being a CEO of your football team. It's being the leader and being able to find and create the best environment culturally for your team to excel. Definitely coaching has certainly helped with that. And from a board point of view, I guess, is it still, the connection still okay?
Yep.
We've still got you.
Yeah, cool. From a board point of view, I you know, I got approached, you know, 6 or 7 months ago to be on the board. I hadn't even thought about being involved back with then. Same attitude. Yeah, no problem. I'll go through the process and see what it's like. And I absolutely love being involved back in football. Again, it's my passion and it's something that, you know, will never leave my side. But if I can contribute to football in Australia from a volunteer point of view, I'm really grateful to it. It's a really important position and I know and understand that. But yeah, look, my passion, as I said before, is to be able to grow that grassroots participation and develop our stakeholder relationships as well, which I think collaboration's the key for uniting in football in Australia.
For sure. And I mean, it's a huge time to be coming on board as a in that capacity with Football Australia, or any capacity, I imagine, anyone in football. It's a huge time here. And, you know, the World Cup bids around legacy and, you know, you've already created a lot of legacy within the Australian football, you know, as well as other Matildas and other players. What do you think the next step is? I know you've mentioned collaboration already.
Yeah, look, I think we're doing such a wonderful job at Football Australia to be able to, you know, in terms of being able to bring on board some key ambassadors, be able to, from a facilities point of view, the investment in government, to be able to collaborate with the leagues as well. You know, to be able to have past and former players be able to contribute to the game, that's something that's really important to me personally. But also, it's just been wonderful to see, you know, the direction and leadership of James Johnson. James has certainly come in and it's been fabulous to see that James is a football person and the direction he sees football here in Australia is about working together. So yeah, look, I think the legacy piece, I think we throw it around quite a lot, but the legacy that this Women's World Cup is going to have on future generations, not only football generations, but the general public and young aspiring sports fanatics and people that aren't involved in sport that will want to be involved in sport is really important. And for us to have a goal at Football Australia for, you know, participation to be at 50-50 equity point of view, I think around 2027, 2028 is a big goal and it's an audacious goal, but I think it's important that we set those goals. But look, yeah, the investment from government, both federally and from a state point of view, has been unbelievable. And obviously they see the value in the Women's World Cup, hence the reason why they have invested so strongly.
So for getting all of us fans excited for 2023, how do you think the Matildas are shaping up? They've got some big games coming up against Canada, which I'm really looking forward to, having one of those games here in Brisbane. So I'm expecting that should be a really good, strong test against the reigning Olympic gold medalists. So how do you think the team are tracking?
Yeah, look, I think I've mentioned the players, the core group of players, the core group of Matildas. Now, these players have been playing together for the last 10 years, and I don't say that lightly. We are going to go into this Women's World Cup the most experienced, the most capped, I would say, in all the countries that have qualified for the Women's World Cup. Now, you guys are the statisticians, and I'm sure you'd know. But look, in terms of continuity, if we can start to play collectively we work out the players in terms of who's going to play. And look, I think we all know the core players that have been playing. You know, we've got the 2016 Olympic Games. I think all those players playing at their best and gelling together, absolutely we can be in the top four come the Women's World Cup in 2023. We all know it. We know what the Matildas are capable of. And it's just about all them firing together. And not to mention, you know, we've got Sam Kerr, and I know that is such a cliche, but it's not a cliche. She is the best striker in the world, hands down, and she can change your game. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing the Matildas play at the 2023 Women's World Cup. And I think we're going to do really, really well.
There's always that bit of tension there, isn't there? The good fans want to see new players get blooded, but then so like you said, we've got that core group that have that experience, so it's be really good to see them, hopefully most of that core group come back to play against Canada and really get a taste over the next few months leading into July next year. It's getting exciting.
Well, you look at Serena Wiegemann's side in the English, she didn't change much, did she? And have a look at everybody had a role and responsibility. And I think that's no different to the Matildas. You know, I'm sure you'll have a core group of players, but that's obviously the job of Tony to name his team. But those core group of players know each other, know their strengths, know what they need to do to get them going. So I think, you know, in terms of us firing at the right time, these games against Canada are going to be super exciting, and we're going to get an opportunity to see them play here at home and in front of our home crowd.
In terms of, it might be backtracking a bit and it might not be at the same time, but I mean, towards the end of your playing career, you had, you know, this new generation coming up, and obviously they've proven their worth. How was that transitional point? Because I know, you know, you look at our team now and there's still another, you know, up to 5 years, even if we get the longevity like the US and Sweden does out of their good players. But how does that transition work with having these 16, 17, 18 year olds come in nipping in, and you've got, you know, those combinations that have worked well for so long and have, you know, broken, made history really, and how do you balance that out?
Yeah, I think when it comes into major tournaments, like your Women's World Cup, and then, you know, just 9 months later, you've got Paris on after that. You can't really dabble with the young players, but there's cycles. And so straight after Paris, no doubt there'll be players, I'm sure there will be, players retiring after that. That's when you can start to blood them. But that's why it's so fundamentally important to have another team, whether it be an under-23 national team. The injury occurs, like an Ellie Carpenter who does her knee, then the player that plays for the under-23s, the right back, can then just slot in, and they're playing a very similar style of football, same philosophies, and know their role and responsibility. So I think that's
just wondering, Heather, if you've got any stories about any of the caps in the 10 or so that have come after you. It's like, I know that Bubs, for example, is about 10 caps on. Do you have any real characters in there that you have a story about?
In terms of Bubs coming up, she was the joker. She was the one that loved to dance and carry on in the change room. You've got Kate Manchay coming on. She was one of the youngest players to come in and live at the AOS.
Well, thanks so much, Heather. That was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry.
News from around the world. The first one, I'm going to butcher this name, and apologies in advance. I will learn it next time. Am I off mute? I am off mute.
This is why we've got Stefan.
This is why. Actually, do you want to? I'll handle it over to Stefan. There's a few Nordic names coming up. Do you want to lead the way for?
I can maybe just briefly mention this one. So I think Heather was in the photo for this one for the APL shot. So world leading football identity, Ebru Kirksal, who's overseas based and has lots of experience, as I understand it, in football and all sorts of areas. So where has she come from? She's worked in the UK and in Scotland, and has a strong history with diversity in football and women's football advocate, but she's also been in fields such as relation management, wealth management, finance, so she's highly experienced, and she's just been invited onto the board of the APL, so a really good addition to the board, and can only help, I think, just with that enormous breadth of experience to help us in the time coming up, which is so important to us. So yeah, really good appointment
for sure. And outside of on the pitch, we've got Tamika Yallop, who left West Ham and has gone to Norway to SK Brann. Stefan's giving me looks. I've butchered it still, but that's okay. And I think I did see that she's followed a coach there. I'm not quite sure of the coach's name. I should know it off the top of my head, but I don't. But it sounds like, and I think she scored. Has she scored, or was that?
She scored in the first 2 minutes. First 2 minutes of her first game. Yep.
So I think it's fair to say that's a decent move so far. Emma Checker has landed in Sweden, or will soon land in Sweden. And I should actually know how to pronounce this one. Does anyone want to bow me out? Uma? No. It's definitely a club that has been around for a long time and has done good things. So that's a good move. And another Aussie on the move is Polly Doran. And I can pronounce this name, Crystal Palace. thankful to my dad for that one. So that's an exciting move there. And it looks like that she will be back in the W League in a couple seasons. She's there. I did see that will happen. So it's good to see that in the meantime, she's getting some experience internationally. So now I want to take the 2026 Asian Cup.
Ah, yeah, sure. So exciting news that we've got four member associations signalling their intention to bid for the 2026 Asian Cup. So, of course, the last iteration was in India, which unfortunately us fans couldn't get across for with COVID ruining all of our football watching plans. But hopefully by 2026, it might be on the table again. So Australia, Football Australia, are putting our hands up again. We last hosted in 2006, so it'd be fantastic to keep the momentum going after 2023, going to 2026 if we could get it. But also the Jordan Football Association, they hosted in 2018, of course. The Saudi Arabian Football Federation, aiming to be the second West Asian zone to stage the competition after Jordan. And Uzbekistan Football Association as well have put their hand up. They hosted this year's AFC Women's Club Championship for the Western Zone. And if successful, they'd be the first Central Asian nation to host the event. So, yeah, in 2022 in India, we saw the competition expand from 8 to 12 teams. So I think that's great, getting expanding the amount of teams and competition. And teams just getting, I guess, access to that higher level competition so that we can see, I think we've used this phrase a lot, the rising tide lifts all boats, which we want a strong competition in our Asian federation to be able to help us and keep us on our toes and strong competition. So that'll be fun. And apparently the decision is expected sometime in 2023. So that's exciting.
That is. And to other exciting news, we've already mentioned it. We've got some more silverware in the cabinet, the AFF Under 18s Women's Championship, which is also exciting because it was Under 17s the last time these young junior, the junior Matildas were out. So it's also a change in age group as well as COVID break. So, yeah, really good. And I think, I'm not sure if Stefan saw any of the game, but I know that Madge has. So I'm happy for one of you guys to talk about it. But it was a 2-0 win against Vietnam, which is very exciting.
Yeah, Vietnam were pretty good on the counter-attack, weren't they? They were quality opponents. I only got to see bits and pieces of a match, so maybe you've got a stronger impression of the game, but we look really solid and we're building up well from the back and through the midfield. And Vietnam had some very gifted technical players up top and were dangerous on the counter. But yeah, from what I saw, it looked like a terrific victory.
Yeah, I think Australia were definitely worth the win. But yeah, a couple of good saves had to be pulled out because Vietnam did have a few good looks on goal. But really impressed Savesca leading up to the first goal, sort of took a long-range shot that came off the crossbar. She took it from about, you know, 20 metres outside the box. And O'Grady almost, well, sort of took the keeper out. Then, yeah, following that ball in, and then like after play got back underway after that little stoppage, Bertolizio, so actually I think Bertolizio put in both crosses, so both of our goals came from crosses. Just yeah, really, really nice balls into really great positions in the box. The first one, Savesco actually put that one in after O'Grady had a good chance at it but missed it, but then it landed nicely for Savesco. And then Stanich Floody got the second goal when she was just unmarked in the box from a really nice cross in. So huge congratulations to Ray Dower and the team. I think like Heather alluded to, it's just I think the confidence that's going to give those young players as they continue building their football careers will be fantastic. And it's always nice to have some silverware in the cabinet, and I'm sure it's an experience that they'll never forget. And I think that's probably one thing that I really like what I see Ray Dower doing with these young teams, is that you see that they're giving the young players the experience of what it's like to be a professional. You see that sort of doing all of the media interviews and all that stuff, all of that media around a major tournament again. So really getting players used to the professionalism of a tournament environment and what might be expected of them as they continue to climb the ranks of football. So just a great experience all around, I think.
For sure. And I mean, the next great experience for our youth sides will be the Under 20 World Cup, which is just insane. I'm so excited for this. It'll be on SBS. It'll be at awkward times for us in Australia.
Not excited about the time zone.
No. So the first game, we're up against Chile, and it's on Thursday. It's this Thursday at 12 p.m. Is that meant to be p.m. or a.m.?
That's lunchtime. I'm pretty sure it's a lunchtime game.
Is it a lunchtime game?
Mm.
Oh,
that's not too bad then.
Maybe we are, but I've got a day off too, so I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I'm watching that. But that's exciting. I'm sure the next few weeks we'll be talking a lot about that.
And we don't need to get our VPNs going for this one, available on SBS, so that's good news.
We love SBS. Moving to the Dub signings, which as a Sydney FC fan has me left in the lurch, but Brisbane Roar again.
Sydney are just going to announce theirs all at once. There's the whole team.
There's been a couple announcements this week. We've got Brisbane Roar have renewed their contract with Shea Connors. Wellington Phoenix, you've got Isabel Gomez has recommitted there, while Western United have made their first signing, which is a big thing. Alana Kern, Cern. Either way, we'll learn it very soon because it's their first signing, and that's an exciting chapter, I think, for Western United, where obviously their feeder club, Calder, I don't know if it's down in our notes, but they've won the Nike Cup. So I imagine if there is that close connection, like it's saying, it could be a sign of things to come for Western United.
Brisbane are actually up to four players. Larissa Crummer was announced as well as returning to the Brisbane role.
We love a returning golden. Was she, no, golden boot overall or Brisbane?
She was Royal Golden Boot, yeah.
Still counts.
Just very quickly on Dub News, Canberra United have announced that they're playing at McKellar Park this season.
Back home.
Yes. So, the interesting subtext about all this was that there was some talk about VAR and how there were some worries in our town here about only one venue we thought could handle VAR, and that being Canberra Stadium, which doesn't suit the Dub at all. So it looks like they've gone back on the need for VAR this season. There's going to be no VAR across the board, is what I've heard. And that was in a Canberra Times article that talked about that aspect. So interesting if that's the case.
Very. VAR obviously is a bigger issue than we've probably got time for today, but that would signal what this season will not bring, for better or for worse. Moving around the world, the UK, whilst the men's have started this weekend, the women's are on hold until September 11. So that'll be, is that the weekend after or before Canada? After Canada.
After, yep.
So it's going to be a busy time for our Matildas that are there, which I'm sure we'll talk about heaps later on, but the Scots got off first. So let's go there with the Scottish WPL. Stefan, do you want to breeze through those results for us?
Can do, quickly. Celtic won 9-0 against Hibernian, and Jacinta Galabadarachi, she started, played 55 minutes and scored a hattie. So fantastic.
Efficient.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And Effie Colville's team, Glasgow City, I don't think Effie's playing at the moment. She's still recovering from an injury, I believe. They won 7-0 over Spartans.
So over to the continent, France will start later on in September as well. Italy, do we have any? Oh, we've got Ivy Lewick, of course, in Italy, which that's again late August. Serbia, we have Vesna Milojevic, is that correct? She will start her season on the 21st of August. And one competition that is well and truly in its season, or a few competitions, is the Nordics, which, Stefan, I imagine you're well across what's happening over there.
Yeah, so it's all just started happening in the last weekend. Three of the four competitions are now underway, so I'll run through those quite quickly, I think. It was round 15 of the top serien in Norway, and Ali Green came on in the 73rd minute for Vålerenga's game against LSK Cabinda, where Carly Rossbacken is. LSK scored quite early on. I watched this game. It was on Norwegian free-to-air TV. They scored in the first half hour and proved difficult to break down after that for Vålerenga, who had made a good start to the game but struggled up until right the end when they started coming home with a wet sail. Elizabeth Torsnes, who everyone would remember from a couple of seasons here with Canberra United, she got a penalty in the 93rd minute to equalise, and described Vålerenga's effort after the game as the team was still on vacation. So Elissa's having a great season though. Top scorer in the league with 14 goals. And Carly Rossbacken is still recovering from her surgery to her foot. And hopefully we'll see her either in the next three games. There's only three more games this season, but there is a playoff series after that for up to six games for the teams. So hoping to see Carly a bit further down the track. And we mentioned before that Meeks scored in Brian Kavina's 4-0 win over Lynn Lightning, and she scored in the second minute. So she seems to have a liking for Nordic football. So it seems to agree with her. And she's obviously, Brian are the top place side in the league as well. So on a good thing there. Over in Sweden, the the league starts again next weekend. So, but there were training games. I'm not going to go through the scores, but I will mention the players who had a bit of a run. Remy Simpson played in AIK's training match against Erebro. Tegan Micah, Charlie Grant, Tegan Micah, Polks, and Minnie all started for their respective teams, which is Rosengard for Tegan Micah and Vizio for Polks and Minnie. They all started, and Charlie Grant was on the bench for that particular game. Some big news out of Hammerby. So we've got Kyra Cooney-Cross there and Courtney Nevin, and they both started in their training game. But the big news is that KK, Elise Kellon-Knight, was named on the bench. So I don't actually know if she got any game time, but that's just terrific to see that she's, back on the training paddock at least, and hopefully back on the field, getting real minutes any minute now. So that's fantastic news. And finally, in Sweden, Emma Checker wasn't on the park for Ymir's win for their training game, but she'll be there no doubt very soon. Quickly over in Denmark, Fortuna Høring defeated Sundby 2-1 away. There was a full game for India Paige Riley, and Angie Beard played 86 minutes, and Claire Wheeler was not in the squad for this game. AGF, where Jenna McCormick has just departed and Matilda McNamara has come in. They had
I should just interject and be Eric.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, Matilda.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think Eric's going to be writing about taking over the Danish part of the Nordic rap, so that's how keen he is. So it's good. AGF had a 1-1 draw against Colding Q, and Matilda played a full game on her debut, which is great. And Winnie Heatley played in Nord Zealand's 3-1 home loss against Ty Thisted. She played a full game, though, on her debut there. And finally, over in Iceland, where it was round 11, Gemma Simon played a full game for Throttur. They're coming fourth. They won 2-0 away to Afturelding. KR Reykjavik had a 2-1 home loss to Stjarnan. But neither of the Aussies in the team, Margot Chavez or Susan Fongsong Cam, were on the card for that game. And Melina Ayres also was not on the card for a Breda Blicks 3-0 win over Keflavik. And that's it for your Norway wraps. There's an awful lot of Aussies over there at the moment, so it's pretty amazing.
Definitely. I feel like we all have an excuse to go and visit that part of the world.
Mm.
And over in the US, we've got a couple of games that happened there involving Aussies, and my sheets just jumped, but that's okay. So Racing Louisville has had two games, and Alex Chidiak looks like she started one and came on for the other. And both were 1-1 draws. So the first one was against OL Rain, and that's the game that she'd started. Whilst the next one was against Washington Spirit, and Shids came on in the 70th minute. Whilst Emily Van Egmon continues to do really well with San Diego Wave, they lose against Kansas City 2-1 in a tight game. Whilst Chelsea Dorbler at Chicago Red Stars didn't play, but her team did beat Gotham FC 2-0, so it was a good win there. And to state football, looks like we're throwing back to Stefan with the ACT.
Yes, just two games on the weekend, as the other couple were washed out. So the game I was at was West Canberra Wanderers versus Canberra United Academy. So that'll be the game that'll be written up this week. And there were four goals in each half. It was a 5-3 win to the West Canberra Wanderers, with two goals to Tara Cannon, one to Ginger Oliver, one to Sarah Whitfield, one to Daisy Carnarvon. And for Canberra United Academy, Isabella Hindmarsh, Luella Coleman and Charlie Gregson all scored. So it was a thrill a minute, that game, as you can imagine, with eight goals. And there was a bit of feeling in it too. There's not many rounds left until finals happen. And both those teams are pressing for the fourth spot. So it was very entertaining for the crowd. And finally, Canberra Croatia beat Wagga City Wanderers 5-0 at Deakin Stadium. And top goal scorer Brittany Palombi scored four of those five, and Grace Gill got the other goal.
In some fine goal scoring form there. We've got no New South Wales in-house like we normally do, so I might just race through these results. Apia Leichhardt lost to Manly United 3-1. Blacktown Spartans got to winning ways 2-0 against the Emerging Jets. Illawarra Stingrays and MacArthur Rams, that's pretty close to a derby in my book. Illawarra lost 2-3 to the Rams, whilst Bankstown City beat, is it New South Wales Spirit or is it just NWS Spirit? I'm not sure.
Northwest Spirit?
Northwest Sydney Spirit, that makes more sense. I lived in New South Wales for too long, I should know this. So anyway, the Spirit lost 2-1, whilst Sydney University and Sydney Olympic, it was a tight game there. Dale would know all about it, so keep an eye out for that write-up, but it was 1-0 to University, and there's plenty of midweek action coming up there. So if you've got your NPL TV, make sure to tune in. And moving further north, Madge, tell us all about Queensland.
Yeah, I had some catch-up games with all the wet weather. And so on Wednesday, we had the Gold Coast United defeating Olympic FC with goals to Dee Thompson and Nadine Keast. Also on Wednesday, Moreton Bay United drew with Queensland Academy of Sport with goals for Moreton Bay to Lani Freer and to QAS, Aaliyah Deverne. Of course, she made it into the Raw squad last season, so good to see her getting on the score sheet. On Thursday, Easts were threatening for a little while to topple Lions FC. They went up 1-0, but then Lions came storming home, winning the game in the end 3-1. Lauren Askin grabbed the goal for Eastern Suburbs. And then for Lions, Tegan Thompson, Tegan Riding and Amy Gunston all picked up goals. Now, the game I went to on Saturday night between Olympic and Kapalabar FC was a nil-all draw, but it was a definition of like a great nil-all draw. It was one of those games that just went back and forth. For Kapalabar, Holly Palmer and Larissa Crummer were having great games. And for Olympic, Alira Toby, a little bit quiet in the first half, but had a couple great opportunities on goal. It got pretty willing in the last few minutes and extra time, but yeah, it remained a nil-all and a fair result there. Gold Coast United actually spoiled the party a little bit for Lions, meaning that Lions can't quite clinch the premiership yet because they won their game against South United 1-0, the goal to Dee Thompson. Lions FC defeated Sunshine Coast Wanderers 5-0. A great goal to Cannon Clough from the sideline, absolutely cannoned one into the goal, but also goals to Marioleka, Aisha Nori, Tegan Thompson and Angela Versluis. And then the last game of round 14 was Eastern Suburbs, beating Queensland Academy of Sport 1-0 with a goal to Maya Bruckner. So, yeah, so Lions well ahead on the ladder there. I expect they will be wrapping up the premiership in the next round, if not the round after. Unless Gold Coast United can keep nipping at their heels, but it seems like pretty much an inevitability. But I think there's only about four or five points separating second and seventh on the ladder. So that's probably where the competition is. So I think there's a few, I think there's Kapalabar taking on Souths next weekend, which I'm looking forward to going out and seeing to see where those other places land for the finals.
Awesome. And I'll take Victoria as the furthest south. As already mentioned, Cowder won the Nike FC Cup final. They were up against South Melbourne and they won 3-0. And Alana Kern, Western United's new signing, was on the score sheet alongside Alex Sinclair and Melissa Taranto. And in Victoria, you also had a catch-up game between the Bullen Lions and FV Emerging, and the Lions took that out 4-2. And round 19 kicks off on Friday the 12th, which I imagine is this Friday, if I have that correct. And now it's, I could tell you actually in Tassie, just briefly, you had a catch-up game. You had two catch-up games, one catch-up game. Olympia and Devonport is the only one I can remember. And Devonport won, I think it was 5-6, 7-8-0, something ludicrous like that. They're pushing for second and third place, which is good to see. So best part of the week, queens of the week. We'll go with Stefan. Who's your queen, king, or non-binary person of the week?
I managed to tune into the Nike FC Cup final. I don't know a lot about Victorian football, but it was on Optus Sports. I had a bit of a look because I was keen to have a look at Grace Taranto and Holly Murray, who are the new Canberra United signings. And I was astounded to find that there were three Tarantos involved across both squads. So there's Grace with Calder, I think. No, Grace was with South Melbourne. With Holly and Melissa and Adriana was with the winning team Calder. So I can't believe that. And I thought immediately about the Grove family here, where there is also three daughters. I assume they're all in the same family. They may not be, but I thought that was pretty cool. And as I was doing my research on them, I found out that there's a city in Italy called Taranto, who've got their own Premier League club called Taranto. So I can just imagine all these Tarantos running around for Taranto.
Sounds like it should be an HBO series.
Yes, it just tickled my fancy and I had to put them in as my queen of the week.
Awesome. Madge, who are yours?
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to go back to Queensland NPL and give a shout out to the Queensland Lions. They're romping away with the premiership, but not only that, they racked up 50 games undefeated, and they're now up to 51 after the weekend. So just a fantastic effort from, a club that's put a lot of investment into their women's program. And so congratulations to the whole team. They've had a fairly consistent team over that time. And to Rob Askew as well, sort of just who did similar things with the Gap a few years ago. So very successful coach and program there at Lions.
Awesome. And I've got half a one and a full queen of the week. My half a one is a hangover from last week, where if I was here, I would have said Leah Williamson as the first England captain in a very long time to bring home any silverware. And I'm still absolutely reveling in that. But the proper queens of the week has to go to the most recent silverware winning side in my heart with the under 18s, junior Matildas. Silverware, and they went out and won the competition, and that's just, as we've already said, it's going to lead to really good things. And I know Ray Dow is really excited about this group of players coming through, so it's going to be awesome to see them popping up in the W League in the next couple of years, or even sooner perhaps for some of them. So
looks like Eric Subiano has left us some queens of the week too. So former Western Sydney Wanderers and Blacktown Spartans player Alex Roberts got married on the weekend, and Glasgow City's Irish forward Claire Shine had a perfect start to her season, scoring a hat-trick in City's 7-0 win over the Spartans, which I think we covered a little earlier.
Had to have the Irish connection. Anyway, I think that's it for us. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks for the chat, Stefan and Madge, and thanks for Heather Garriock for having a chat earlier.